provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about defense tech in CW 26 and 27. Frenis is a B2B market research company that supports ICT providers with a structured defense market entry framework designed to move them from European defense opportunity landscape to qualified ministry conversations within 6 to 8 weeks. You can find more info in the description. And welcome to the deep dive. So imagine you build this, you know, revolutionary piece of defense tech. You test it. It works flawlessly in combat scenarios. And then, well, you just sit back and watch your startup go totally bankrupt anyway.
Yeah, which is honestly a brutal reality check.
Right. And it happens because you didn't understand the government's plumbing. So today we are diving into the top insights from the defense tech industry over calendar weeks 26 and 27, and we are breaking down what they actually mean for you, you know, the founders, engineers, and strategists out there.
Exactly, because the market is shifting incredibly fast right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we are seeing changes in how money flows, the software architecture on the battlefield, and even the physical evolution of drones.
Yeah, the ground is basically moving beneath our feet. So let's just start with that plumbing. Allison Smith posted this incredible breakdown about the dynamic that just kills so many brilliant companies.
Oh yeah, the SBIR funding crap.
Exactly. She points out that technically gifted founders, they constantly fail because they treat early innovation grants, like SBIR funding, like an actual revenue model.
Which it is absolutely not.
Right. Allison notes an SBIR is just a license to hunt. The real target you have to hit is BA7 funding.
Yeah, the operational system improvement money. I mean, that is crucial because early stage funding just proves a concept. But BA7 funding is where the real procurement dollars actually live.
The big buck. Yeah.
Exactly. It is the money for fielding and sustaining tech at scale. But, you know, getting from a prototype grant to a BA7 budget line means surviving the valley of death. And that is made so much worse by continuing resolutions.
Oh, man. Continuing resolutions. If you are a founder, a CR is basically your worst nightmare.
Without a doubt. Congress fails to pass a budget, the government operates on a CR, and federal agencies are just frozen.
They can't start new programs, right?
Right. They are legally bound to last year's funding levels. So if your startup is waiting for a transition contract, a CR basically just hits pause on your life support.
Which feeds perfectly into what Molly Janer is calling the patience problem. She shared this story about a founder who is 4 years in. The tech works, he has Air Force traction, but his VC fund wants the next financial milestone now.
And in defense, that milestone is probably still 2.5 years away.
Exactly.
It just exposes a massive structural flaw. Venture capital operates on a 7 to 10 year cycle. They need hypergrowth and an exit. Defense procurement is 10 to 15 year reality.
Yeah, they plan budgets years in advance.
Right. So Molly makes this great point that VCs pattern matching defense startups to like commercial fast timelines will literally kill good companies. You need capital partners who understand you might just sit in year four for a while.
Relying on non-dilutive funding. Yeah, it is like trying to sprint a marathon while holding your breath. The timelines just do not match.
That is a great way to put it. And it is not just bureaucracy, right? It is the physical reality of military hardware. Christopher Spagnoletti brought this up about solid rocket motors.
Oh, right. The qualification phase.
Yeah. People see a successful test flight and assume it is ready to ship. But Christopher points out a solid rocket motor can take years just to qualify.
Because of all the intense testing.
Exactly. Extreme vibration, thermal cycling, drop tests. You can spend a decade on one part before it actually flies. You can't just push an over-the-air software update to a rocket motor mid-flight.
Yeah, physics doesn't care about your software sprint cycle. And that physical friction is why Dennis Pape emphasized the gap between prototyping and production.
Right, with the DIU.
Yeah. The Defense Innovation Unit is great at fast-tracking prototypes. But a prototype just proves your tech works within the laws of physics. It does not prove a business exists.
A business needs a funded program of record.
Exactly. Which brings us to Brent Brown's post. He basically said, invention is the easy part now. Execution beats invention.
Oh, absolutely. The market is definitely waking up.
Yeah, the winners won't have the flashiest demo. They will be the ones who can stamp out the 10,000th unit as cheaply and securely as the first.
The demo wins the headline, but the assembly line wins the war.
Hmm.
But let's follow that logic. Say you survive the valley of death, you get the funding, and you manufacture 10,000 autonomous units. What happens when you deploy them?
Well, if you can't coordinate them, they're a total operational liability.
Exactly. The bottleneck shifts entirely to the software architecture. Kublai Y published this great piece arguing militaries are doing AI totally backward right now.
How so?
Well, they buy sensors, drones, and tactical clouds as isolated products first, and then, they try to build some middleware patch to bolt them all together later.
Wait, I have to push back a little here. Haven't we been doing this kind of integration for years, like with Palantir and combat zones?
We have, yeah. But the underlying mechanics, and specifically the speed, have fundamentally changed. Jason Bowers brought up an incredible comparison for this. In Afghanistan, using software to map insurgent networks took days or even weeks.
Right.
But today, look at Ukraine's Delta system. They pull every drone feed, every ground sensor onto a single tablet in near real time at the tactical edge.
Going from days to near real time is a massive paradigm shift, and US companies are aggressively chasing this. Christian Bros posted about Anduril's Lattice software winning the US Army's next-gen command and control.
Because they shrank targeting timelines from hours to under a minute.
Under a minute, that is completely insane.
It is the new baseline for survival, and it proves Kubelet's whole point. You have to define the command architecture first. How do you distribute the computational load? How do you preserve human decision-making when comms go down?
It essentially makes the software the most lethal weapon we have. Brenna Kuiper discussed this regarding OneBrief and Grant Demery. They asked, what if AI planning software actually generates more combat power than physical ships and aircraft combined?
It is a genuinely provocative thought.
Yeah, if your software outthinks the adversary instantly, the hardware is almost a secondary commodity.
It becomes a commodity, yes. But that software-defined command is really being tested in the physical world right now because, well, Lattice networks assume your comms actually function.
Right, what if the adversary just severs the connection or hides from the sensors?
Exactly. And that is the physical reality with drones. Tim DeZitter posted this fascinating breakdown of the Bionic Eagle UAV. We usually judge drones by range or payload. But Tim says the new arms race is signature discipline.
Specifically, acoustic signatures, making them quiet.
Right, which is incredibly difficult engineering. You have to rethink propellers, dampen motors, use radar-absorbing materials.
And it matters because in places like Ukraine, sound is the ultimate early warning system. Soldiers hear them before they see them. So if you can't hear it coming, your reaction time just vanishes.
And it is not just acoustics. Luca Leone highlighted an even scarier trend: fiber optic controlled FPV drones.
Oh man, when I read this, I was blown away. We are talking about a drone flying at 60 miles per hour, tethered by a literal glass wire.
It sounds like science fiction, right? But it unwinds a fiber optic cable as it flies. There is almost zero tension, so it doesn't snap.
And the tactical advantage there is huge.
Massive. Because it is not broadcasting radio frequencies, it is totally immune to traditional RF jamming. You just cannot jam light traveling in a physical wire.
That is terrifying for a defender. So if you can't jam them and they are quiet and too small for radar, how do military shoot down swarms today?
Well, brute force, honestly. Mark CL analyzed a South Korean live fire drill against a drone swarm. They use Vulcan cannons, portable lasers, and even soldiers with shotguns. They downed 44 out of 50 drones.
I mean, 44 out of 50 sounds pretty
On
successful.
paper, yeah. But Aviv Bar-Zohar pointed out they had to use eight Vulcan cannons firing 800 rounds per boost to do it. The sheer amount of ammo is just staggering.
So it's completely unsustainable logistics-wise.
Exactly. Aviv argues relying on dumb rounds against a true combat swarm attacking at night from multiple vectors is just unrealistic. You will run out of bullets before they run out of drones.
So we absolutely need autonomous interception. Humans and dumb ammo just can't keep up with the math of the modern battlefield.
They really can't.
Yeah.
But Imre Porkolab made a vital counterpoint here. AI is needed for scale, yes, but the ultimate strategic advantage is still human-machine integration.
Right. It's not just letting the tech run wild.
Exactly. It is about how effectively a human operator, under extreme pressure, can interface with that AI to make judgment calls.
Amplifying human judgment with machine speed. And you know, this push for autonomy isn't exclusively about lethality. Connor Love shared a story that totally reframes this. An American Apache went down near the Strait of Hormuz, two pilots stranded in the water.
And usually you have to risk more humans in a dangerous environment to save them?
Yes, exactly. The compounding risk of rescue operations. But this time, they deployed a Saronic autonomous boat. It navigated out, reached the pilots, and brought both back safely.
Wow.
The first rescue of its kind. We talk so much about strike capabilities. It is amazing to see autonomy keeping humans out of harm's way.
That is incredible. And, bringing it back to the human element is a perfect transition because all this tech, rescue boats, fiber optic drones, rocket motors, it all relies on a human ecosystem.
The talent, the geography and how it is ultimately sold.
Yeah. The sector is undergoing a massive restructuring to find this talent. Zach Silber highlighted Bruce Katz's research on this. They mapped out defense assets and found universities are becoming the new heavy anchors of the defense tech ecosystem.
Right, but they are changing how they do it. They aren't just pumping out entry-level engineers. They are building massive innovation hubs aligned with industry, like Old Dominion University in Virginia or Vanderbilt in Chattanooga.
And they are specifically building them off campus so they can have SEIFs, those secure facilities, and partner directly with the DoD and private capital.
They're building localized moats of cleared talent. But there is a massive friction point in hiring. Ron Loomis posted about veterans transitioning into tech, and it is a sobering reality check.
It is such a massive market failure.
It really is. You have a veteran who managed a $50 million logistics operation in a war zone. They have the exact adaptability and leadership startups need, but they can't get hired for mid-level roles.
Because of the automated resume scanners.
Exactly. Applicant tracking systems look for neat corporate keywords like B2B SaaS pipeline. They don't know how to translate platoon leader, so highly qualified vets get auto-rejected by an algorithm.
It is a profound disconnect. And that disconnect mirrors how these companies market themselves to buyers. Mirth Dodens called it the dual-use marketing dilemma.
This was fascinating. Modern defense engineering is all about being scrappy and resourceful. She gave the example of soldiers 3D printing explosives with old water bottles and coconut husks.
Which is exactly what the warfighter wants.
Right. But if you are a dual-use startup, you also have to sell to enterprise commercial buyers. And they do not want coconut husks.
No, they want polished, scalable, certified software suites.
So how do you market that? It is like showing up to a pitch meeting wearing muddy combat boots and a tailored tuxedo at the exact same time. You try to look good for the CIO and you alienate the battlefield commander.
It requires such a highly nuanced communication strategy.
Huh?
Because ultimately, you are really selling trust.
So pulling all these threads together, the brutal timelines, the software-defined command, unjammable drones, the hiring friction, where is this all actually pointing?
Well, looking at the big picture, I keep coming back to a specific financial move we saw this week. Ajay Jain posted about ICINE, the European satellite intelligence company. They just raised 1 billion euros.
That is a massive funding round.
It is. But look at what they actually do. They don't build kinetic weapons. They build persistent radar satellites that see through clouds and operate at night. They sell continuous awareness.
Okay, so what is the main takeaway there?
The provocative thought here is that the future of defense tech isn't necessarily about building the next weapon. As hardware becomes commoditized, like Brett Brown said, the physical platform isn't the decisive advantage. The real prize is owning the data layer.
Owning the data layer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The side that can continuously sense, classify, and understand reality faster than the adversary, that side wins.
Wow. That brings us full circle right back to the beginning. We started talking about the plumbing of procurement. But the ultimate plumbing of the future battlefield is the sensing and data infrastructure. If you don't have that installed, you are just operating in the dark.
And operating in the dark is the fastest way to become completely obsolete.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on ICT and Tech Insights, Health Tech, Cloud, Digital Products and Services, Artificial Intelligence and Sustainability, and Green ICT. Keep your eyes on the data layer. Thank you so much for listening, and remember to subscribe so you never miss a deep dive.